Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, January 6. Hello, everyone. Orion Samuelson here for our first visit of the new year 2017. Max Armstrong taking the week off. And I must say, I appreciate the comments and the emails I've received from many of you who watched the coverage of the Rose Parade on RFD TV. It was my privilege once again to serve as co-host of that special event with Pam Minikin, who does such a great job. So thank you for all your fine comments. We did have a good time. Now, let's talk markets. As I mentioned to our guest this week, Jerry Goodell, before we talked, the Dow came close, but no cigar. Today, in the first hour of trading, the Dow came within a third of a point of hitting that magical 20,000 number. But after that, it came close a few times, but it didn't get back there, despite the fact that we did see record highs for the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, helped by Apple. And that extended the two-month rally fueled by optimism about the election of Donald Trump as president. Since that November election, the Dow is up 9%. The reason Apple helped the market today, it was up 1.1%, came after Canada's Competition Bureau did not find sufficient evidence that the iPhone maker had engaged in anti-competitive conduct, closing a two-year investigation into Apple by the Canadian Competition Bureau. So with that being said, where did we end the first week of the new year? Well, the Dow ended at 19,964, and for the week, the Dow was up 1%. The S&P 500 ended the week at 2277, or today at 2277, and for the week, the S&P 500 was up 1.7%. The NASDAQ composite added 33 points today, ending the day at 5521, and for the week, the NASDAQ was up about 2.6%. So all in all, a pretty good day for the Wall Street. Certainly, if you remember a year ago, a lot better. A year ago at this time, the first 10 days of stock trading on Wall Street turned out to be strictly down. I think the worst 10-day start for a year in historical terms for Wall Street. So, this week is under the belt. Let's look ahead to next week. After the fairly solid employment report today, the traders will now shift attention to retail sales data next week because the brick-and-mortar retail outlets had a challenging holiday season. The Commerce Department, though, is expected to report next Friday that retail sales in December went up 0.7%, boosted by auto sales. And the Labor Department is likely to show next week that producer prices increased 0.3% in December, which would lift the year-on-year gain in the producer price index to 1.6%. We'll also get November's wholesale inventory and job openings on Tuesday. And then we start getting our first set of corporate earnings of the year. Major banks reporting their fourth quarter results. Next week on Friday, investors will take a look at the quarterly results of J.P. Morgan and Chase. And also on Friday, Wells Fargo and Company will be reporting. And investors will pay close attention to the progress the third largest U.S. bank is making as it works to overcome that long simmering sales problem that blew up in September and really hammered their stock. We'll also get a report from Bank of America. They have driven up shares of the second largest U.S. bank more than 30% since the presidential election. BlackRock Incorporated, that's the investment management's industry bellwether, will be reporting fourth quarter and full year 2016 results on Friday. Investors will be watching that. And as markets brace for some possible negative data from U.S. and China, it's expected that a news conference by President Donald Trump in the coming week, Federal Reserve officials will be offering their views on the health of the economy and whether the next rate hike will come sooner or later than expected. On Tuesday of next week, General Motors will tell investors what they can expect from the number one U.S. automaker in 2017. Top GM officials will present the company's financial outlook at a Deutsche Bank conference in Detroit, and that will be held at the same time as the Detroit Auto Show. Also, Ford Motor Company CEO Mark Fields is expected to outline forecasts for 2017 financial performance at a conference during that same Detroit Auto Show. And of course, Ford and General Motors have come under fire from President-elect Donald Trump on moving jobs to Mexico from the United States. And as of today, the next target for the president-elect is Toyota and Nissan, who the president-elect said are in for some heavy tariffs to be added to any vehicles they make in Mexico then come into the United States. Looks like it will not be a dull time under the leadership of Donald Trump as we move into his administration. Some of the other reports that came out this week and that certainly had an impact on the marketplace: U.S. Debt, again, our trade deficit rose for a second straight month. But on the positive side, we did have a surge in orders that boosted the U.S. services sector. And on Thursday, jobless claims tumbled as well. But U.S. services sector hit a one-year high in December. The number of Americans, meanwhile, filing for unemployment benefits fell to near a 43-year low last week, suggesting the economy ended 2016 with strong momentum. And the economy is expected to get a boost from Mr. Trump's plan to increase infrastructure spending and to cut taxes. But back to that U.S. trade deficit, for the second month in a row, it moved higher. The Commerce Department reported today the trade gap increased 6.8% to $45.2 billion in the month of November. Then there's the construction and manufacturing construction sectors that did have a pretty good year, apparently. Factory activity accelerated to a two-year high in December amid a surge in new orders and rapidly rising raw material prices, indicating that maybe some of the drag on manufacturing from the prolonged dollar strength and a slump in oil prices was fading. Other data this week showed U.S. construction spending hit a 10-and-a-half-year high in November, providing a boost to a fourth-quarter economic growth estimate. The economy, according to one analyst, ending the year on a high note, with even the manufacturing sector showing signs of faster growth. I'm always fascinated by the monthly auto sales reports from the automobile companies, showing once again that at one time the vehicle that was basically an agricultural farmer rancher vehicle, the pickup, no longer the case. As we take a look at top selling vehicles in December, the top three were pickup trucks. Ford series pickup truck, the F-Series, up 2.7%. The Chevy Silverado down 13.8%, but still number two in vehicle sales. And then the Ram, the Dodge Ram, up 14.9% in the month of December. And the top-selling vehicles through December for the year, Ford F-Series up 5.2%, 821,000 vehicles. Second place, Chevy Silverado was down 4.3% at 574,000 vehicles. And number three, another pickup, the Ram, up 8.7%. So indeed, the love of the pickup truck has moved into town and suburbs. It's no longer just a farm vehicle. And we have a lot to talk about in the first week on agricultural commodities. So we're going to do that with our guest, Jerry Goodell of the Price Group, when we continue here on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
We begin with the first week of trading here in 2017 by talking to our longtime analyst and friend, Jerry Goodell. Jerry is with the Price Group, headquartered in Chicago. And as we look back over the year 2016, a lot of unusual events for me. One of the more unusual, the weather rally for soybeans in early June. What about you, Jerry?
Well, I think it was kind of a delayed reality of what was going on and some of the problems that were started in April and in Argentina's harvest situations and then some dry conditions that snuck into the late harvest situations in not so much soybeans as much as it really hit the corn market and their second crop corn, which really starts being a factor in that April and May periods. And all of a sudden, that factor, along with some of the tightness that occurred in beans, put the two together, and we had had an unusual rally at that point. There's maybe a little bit of U.S. problems, but in general, no. But it's I think it's also made things quite interesting as we've come into the 2017 because of the sensitivity that we've kind of looked to here on South America, and as you kind of mentioned there. Off air, but you know, we're constantly talking about Argentina and Brazil now.
And it's a little bit opposite of what it was last year. Harvest was impacted by their rains. This year, it's planting that's being impacted, right?
Exactly right. In Argentina, particularly, this has really been a building affair over the last 6 or 8 weeks, but in reality of it, it's really became center stages here with the rains. The last two weekends down in Argentina have been very significant between Buenos Aires and straight westward towards Cordoba, Santa Fe. That's really the heart of their for planting areas in that, and because of the fact that that's also impacting some late wheat, that's delaying some soybean plantings, it's impacting corn that's already been planted. There's lots of different things, and now this coming weekend, we're not expecting a lot of short-term rain, but they're talking about rains coming back in for next weekend. But also the focus has been also extended into Brazil because of the dryness that's kind of occurred from basically the eastern half of the general area of northern Brazil where the beans are being planted, or beans are being impacted, I should say. The western half is where all the production's at, Mato Grosso and western Goiás, but eastern Goiás and Viafa and Bahia, I'm sorry, I've very bad pronunciation of my Portuguese, and that they're getting some impact, and now there's some talk that that area is finally going to get some rain. And that's really the big impact today, is that the longer-term forecasts are projecting both in the European and American model for next week.
So that's why we're seeing the drop in soybean prices again today, mainly?
Exactly. A couple of days ago was the fact that it wasn't there. You would go back and forth. As we all know in the U.S., we have the European and American model. If they get together and say the same thing, everybody gets a lot more confident. 2 days ago, not so confident. Today, a lot more confident. That might change on Monday.
I know it could. Now, earlier this week, you sent me video of the flooding in Argentina, and I have to admit, I didn't realize that land is as totally flat as it is. There's nowhere for the water to run.
Exactly, and I think that's the part of the reason we had the rally that we did have, was that that video did pop up after the holidays here. Somebody was out really pointing out the issues that really Argentina has a whole different soil composition than Brazil, and particularly Mato Grosso, where that area needs rain on a constant kind of basis. And you get worried about dryness. Well, in Argentina, once you get a little, it's kind of like peat bog, if that makes any sense to the U.S.,
yeah,
in my opinion, right, that you get a little rain on that thing, and this keeps building, and all of a sudden it's just, there's no place for it to go unless you have tile, and guaranteed they don't have that, or drainage ditches, all the things we put in over the last 100 years.
About a year ago at this time, we were talking about China maybe slowing down its purchase of soybeans and some other ag products. Did that happen?
On an overall basis, by the time we got to fall, no, partly because of the fact that South America's crop size slipped, so they kept things going in the U.S. We've been really strong up until this week. This morning's numbers were, I guess you'd have to say, really disappointing with the 3.2 million soybeans. But I think basically we've been running at such a hectic pace all the way through this fall and up through December. I think we just had some people decide to take the week off during the holidays. I don't think the market's reaction today is really because of the export sales, but it's going to be watched again. But we're still way ahead on export sales. And I think the USDA potentially could actually increase their export sales projection for the 16-17 crop here because of the fact we're running 180, 200 million above the seasonal five-year average. You know, we can all debate this, when is the crop going to start coming from South America? Will they switch down there? All those things are going to be part of it. But once you get so far ahead of it, you're going to tend to kind of limp to the end and potentially could still have some expanded sales, particularly if we have problems down there in either one of those countries.
During 2016 crop growing season, we kept getting monthly reports saying it's going to be a record corn and bean crop in this country. Now, next week on the Thursday the 12th, we'll get the final numbers from USDA. Are you looking for any surprises in that report?
No, not really. You know, once you get to this stage of the historical basis, you don't tend to have a lot of big adjustments. Back in the history of them here, if you go back and look at the relationships of these numbers, corn tends to have a situation where like six out of the last 10 years we've tended to have a slightly lower number, but we're not talking about a half or a bushel down at the best, or a bushel and a half. Those numbers, and in reality, when we're talking about 15 billion bushel crop, it's not going to make a lot of big difference in that. It's still going to be, the corn side is particularly going to be focused on South America. Soybeans, there's been a tendency there, they're being down a little bit on the corn, on their average yield, and that, which won't make a big difference. On the soybean side, four out of the last 5 years, we've had a slight increase. But that's where I think the expanded exports could make a minor difference there. And in essence, I don't think the 480 carryover stock number we have right now is going to rise. There's been a lot of expectations of that maybe going up, but there's not a big long history of that, of that number going up. And as time goes on, we could still narrow down that 480 as we go through the spring.
Now, as we look at 2017, there will be a lot of outlook meetings this winter for the next couple of months. If you'll be at any of them, what are you going to be telling producers they ought to be looking at for 2017?
Well, I think that last year's extreme expansion of corn is going to be cut back, I think, pretty significantly. The range seems to be from between 4 million to maybe 5. I don't know if we're going to get to 6, but at least in the 4 to 5 million category on reduced corn, particularly in some of those areas west of the Mississippi here where they had some pretty big expansion. from there. It's interesting in the fact that there was some idea that we could see some connection to the insurance program, that people might get some payments here, but because of the fact that there was a basis decline versus a futures decline, there hasn't been a real big insurance payment generation because of this fall's low prices. Unfortunately, since the futures price didn't go below $3, it was cash prices, we well know, were way down below $3 in the right. west of the Mississippi. On the bean side of things, that's expectations seems to be in that same 3 or 4 million category up. I think that's not a it's something to be worried about on a longer term basis. But I think between now and March, or at least late February and March, there's still this uncertainty about weather and what's going to happen. And particularly at this point, if we get some extended problems in Argentina, that's going to end up reducing their beans and corn plantings. I think it's going to keep the emotions going. But on a longer-term basis here, we're going to be at the mercy of the world weather trends at this point. And right now, there's some people even trying to think that we might be back moving towards El Nino if you want to look at the Pacific Ocean. Other people were in a La Nina because that's what the kind of weather we've had.
Are we looking at a lot of corn and beans still in farmer hands, or are they pretty well sold out the crop?
No. In the corn side, there's plenty of corn in producers' hands. Primarily, they've been, as they kind of were last year, kind of utilizing the soybean prices as to keep in their bank account a little bit full here of whatever that is, or in some cases, hoping that there's going to look for a rally. The bean side of things have been a little more attractive right now. We have seen, though, I'd have to say right now, the 357 to 360 prices here on March corn. With the basis, as we all know, being in this game as long as we both have, the basis relationships back against the D's and now into the March and how that's switched over, we are now beginning back to some of the prices in the cash out there in the country that is approaching some of the midsummer prices of last year in the cash, or maybe just a little under it. But that's an interesting factor here. If we do have any weather problems in the corn in the near term, I think we will start to see some more producer markings in the corn because of the fact that they haven't been marketing the corn. But in reality here, that's a 370-75 game. I think that's particularly that came along here near term. I would recommend producers to make some sales in the corn for sure. And also stare at some of that new crop out there just a little bit. That would be over $4. We're at $3.85 today just to get started. But the one thing about the corn, if we do have any kind of weather that's negative, that 175 level we had this year is not likely to come back next year if we have any weather issues. If that slips down below 167, 168, things could change.
The one certainty we have, markets are never dull. And we thank you throughout the year, Jerry, for joining us to offer your expertise. And I hope 2017 will be a good one for you, sir.
Thank you, Orion. It's always good to talk, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, that's Jerry Goodell with The Price Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The commodity world had its ups and downs for the first week of trading as we once again looked to South America. You heard Jerry Goodell talk about weather concerns in South America coming earlier this year than they did a year ago when the weather affected the harvest of soybeans in Argentina. This year, weather affecting the planting. But as we look at today's activity, corn and soybean futures were down, weakening demand for U.S. exports as they get very close to the start of harvest in Brazil. Wheat futures also dropped today, pressured by a round of profit-taking after Kansas City hard red winter wheat hit a 4.5-month high. But there are always weather concerns, this time about crop damage from a cold snap in key growing wheat areas, as well as positioning ahead of expected fund purchases, limited declines in the wheat market. Soybeans notched the biggest decline, down 1.8%, while corn dropped 0.9%. The Department of Agriculture today said that weekly soybean export sales fell to a lower than expected 87,700 tons. That's old and new crop combined in the latest week, down from 979,000 tons a week ago. Corn export sales also down 429,300 tons, dropping below the low end of the trade forecast. So that's basically what happened on the market today, and we'll take a look at where we'll start pricing come next year and next week, and we'll check those a little bit later. But soybean export sales really slid to their lowest in the current marketing year last week. And so that could have an impact on the buyers in the world turning to Brazil as it gets ready to harvest its crop. Interesting story this week that a case that happened back in 2011. Can you remember 2011 when the MF Global Trading Fund collapsed and the company, particularly the CEO of the company, former New Jersey Governor John Corzine, was charged with mishandling funds, shook the futures market considerably because they had misused $1 billion in customer funds during the 2011 collapse of MF Global. Well, this week, CFTC assessed a civil penalty, $5 million, for misuse of the $1 billion in customer funds during 2011. And the CFTC also said that Edith O'Brien, former assistant treasurer of MF Global, would pay a $500,000 civil penalty for aiding and abetting MF Global's violations, according to CFTC. And talking to some of the traders at the Board of Trade, all of them that I talked to at least expressed disappointment that Mr. Corzine did not get any prison time for mishandling customer funds amounting to $1 billion. U.S. Seeds and Agrochemicals Company, Monsanto, which is in the process of being bought by Germany's Bayer for $66 billion, swung to a quarterly profit this week, helped by higher demand from South America. Sales of soybean seeds and traits jumped 37% as more farmers in South America sowed the company's genetically modified soybean seed. But adding some color to all of this is the fact that Monsanto shareholders voted in December to approve a raised $128 per share offer from Bayer that, if approved by regulators, would create a company commanding more than a quarter of the world market for seeds and pesticides, and it would be the largest ever cash takeover of a U.S. company. But it looks like it's moving forward, and Bayer and Monsanto executives have repeatedly said they are confident the deal will pass regulatory muster, which is a necessary step in order to close the sale as expected later this year. So the beat goes on, and now let's take a quick look at where we are going to start the trading week on Monday. In livestock, the February lean hog contract will start the week at 63.97 a hundredweight. February live cattle at 114.82 a hundredweight. January feeder cattle will start the week at $128.32 a hundredweight. March wheat starts next week at 4.23 and a quarter. March corn starts the week at 3.94 a bushel, and January soybeans will start the week at $9.86 a bushel. We're out of time. Thank you for joining us. I'm Orion Samuelson on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.